Season 2, Episode 8. In this episode, we sit down and have a chat with Mark Watson. Mark's a gun tuna fisherman from over in Tasmania, and he's been at it a long time. He won't tell anyone because he's a real humble dude, but he's been there, done that. So sit back and enjoy this episode of the Hook Podcast.
On the boat, mayhem on just one more.
Oh. What a fish.
Welcome to the Hook Podcast, mate.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So, obviously, a bit cold over there in Taz, is it?
We had a beautiful day today, but it has been a bit cold and wet over the last couple of weeks.
I had a look at the weather report. Looks like she's blowing pretty hard over there at the moment too.
Yeah, it's been blowing. Look, I've been there, you know, I work at the night time on the water and it has been pretty windy and not the best of fun some nights, but you carry on regardless.
You do indeed, mate. So starting off, mate, obviously, how long you been fishing for? I got some dirt on you a bit earlier from the lovely bride. So I've been given a bit of info here, but we'll play it out and see where it goes. So when did you start? What brought you to it? And how long you been doing it for?
Look, I'm probably like most males, mate, most blokes like you and me and all the other people we know. Started at a young age fishing with Dad. Dad was a professional fisherman for the scallops and the crays down here in Tassie. So that's probably where I started. But I sort of went away from it a little bit as a kid and did footy and all the other things. And sort of when I got to about 16, 17, I was doing my apprenticeship and got caught up with a bloke by the name of Mick Abbott, owned a big shark cat, and sort of got introduced to tuna fishing at that age of probably 17. And sort of that was it. Then I sort of, you hook that one big fish and she's game on. You sort of can't go away from it. And I've done that probably up until last year. Got very, very heavily involved in comp fishing.
All right, so you've segued into that. So I'm gonna tap you on it right now. So let's run through some of the awards, mate. I know you're not you don't like talking about it, but or bragging about it. But let's hear the awards. Let's see the roll of honour.
Look, mate, I'm not one to brag about it. I've done it for the enjoyment and being with me mates, and I've always said that. But on the way, I've picked up numerous tag and releases through the years. Pauline Grant trophy's one that comes to mind, which was a lady that looked after us all in the tuna club as our radio operator, and Pauline died and got offered a trophy come up, perpetual trophy, which was all about her. I was first one to sort of get my name on that, which meant a real lot to me and, you know, sort of close to the heart. So that's one that sort of sticks in my mind a fair bit. Bluefin Championships down here. Won them a couple of times for a boat under 6 metres. I've won them a couple of times outright. Run numerous comps, mate. Look, it is a big list, but I never like to look at the list, if you know what I mean. I know it's there. I had Robin Banks, who's our secretary at Tuna Club, 1 year, did me a thing and give it to me. And I look back and I just thought, geez, I have accomplished a bit.
Yep. So I'm pretty certain you took out tag and release tuna for Australia. Is that right?
I didn't for Australia. I missed out on the Australia award by a few fish. I had a year that someone said something to me and I thought, nah, stuff it. I'm going to have a crack at that myself. I tagged 235 bluefin here in Tassie. The smallest one would have been about 10, 12 kilos and the biggest one would have been about 40, 45. But look, in doing that, I formed a great friendship with another bloke, and in doing all that and tagging all them fish, Daniel, there's one thing that sticks in my mind. We had a trip right down south, me and Phil's son Jake and Justin Doreen, and we all went. We set out with the goal of me tagging as many fish as I could in a day. That day I actually tagged 60 fish. Now, when we were tagging them fish, Jake jumped on a rod and he got a fish, which was a bloody nice fish. He was about 70 or 80 kilos, and he had to put a bit of work into it. And I've always been one to encourage people on a rod, and I think that's what gets you over the line a little bit when you're on a bigger fish. If someone just keeps saying that thing to you or having a go at you, that it spurs you on to do it. I did that with Jake, and I said to him, do you want to kill this fish, mate? It's the biggest fish that you've ever caught. And he turned around to me and he said, no, mate. He said, I'm going to put a tag in it if you let me have a tag. And I said, mate, this isn't about me. It's about all of us together. And that is one thing that has stuck in my mind to today, about that day and about all my fishing, that he could have killed the biggest fish he'd ever caught, but he tagged it. And I think that's a great thing. And I said to Phil, that's something to be very, very proud of as his father, you know, because a lot of kids burn a big fish, mate, they would have killed it.
Yeah, yep. I know where you're coming from. We have a bit of a rule on the boat that whenever anyone gets their fish or whatever, you know, you're the one on the rod. It's your call whether you want to take it or tag it. Obviously, you know, we're entitled to take fish and we eat everything that we take. We don't take it just for stringing it on a gantry. We'll eat it. So yeah, we run a similar rule on the boat, mate. And if you want to kill a fish, that's you're entitled to do it. And as long as it's legal and all that sort of stuff, we'll do that. But the majority of people that have been on our boat, especially for marlin season, not one's wanted to kill one. They all stick a tag in it and send it on away. And it's a pretty good reflection of how our younger generation of fisher people are coming through the ranks, I suppose you could say, and where their head's at with sustainable fishing and all those sorts of things. So that comes back to people like yourself who've been heavily involved in clubs and educating those people. And, you know, I know we met through fishing a tournament over here in Victoria many years ago now. And but I know you've been a big advocate for the tag and release, and I know you've done a lot of stuff in that space, and I know your club has been really heavily involved in that tag and release side of things over there as well.
Yeah, well, I think the year and me and Phil laugh about this, we were down south fishing and it's getting late in the day, and I said to him, I said, geez, we'll keep a fish for one of our mates, and we did, and we had a couple of tags left. And I said, look, Phil, I've tagged enough, you know. I said, if I win this thing, I win it. If I don't, I don't. And it was the end of the financial year, so all the tagging was finishing up and everything. Well, we kept a fish and give it to our mates, which we like to do. And a couple of months later, the Tuna Club got handed an award for tagging the most fish as a club for the year, which was 899. And Phil looked at me and I looked at Phil, and we both burst out laughing, knowing that if we'd have stuck one more tag in, that would have been 900. But I said to him, it's not about that. It's about that mateship, as you know, about fishing. Like, I remember the first year I went up and did Lizard Island comp with Brett Cleary. You know, I went up there hoping that I'd just see a marlin, and if I caught one, it was a bonus. Well, I met a bloke that a lot of people in the fishing world know up there in Mick Mears. Absolute legend. You know, top bloke, showed me a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And I was lucky enough to grab a marlin, tag it with a satellite tag, which was even more great for me because I knew we could watch where it went and what it did. But I had a tear in my eye. I went up to Brett and shook his hand, mate. And it's that memories and them sort of things that you just can't replace, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Went back the next year, and Nick Belts, another good friend of mine, he snagged one, you know. It's put a tag in it and let it go. You get a lot of pleasure out of it.
You do. You do indeed, mate. I always feel a little bit guilty if we chuck a flyer or a gaff in one. Like, you get it on the deck. Like, you know, you helped me out a hell of a lot with my bluefin fishing, especially, you know, we were speaking about the barrels, and last year when we – or the year before, I think it was, when we got the barrel and all that sort of stuff. Even when I dragged that fish onto the boat, I felt pretty guilty after I put a gaff in it and dragged it on the boat. Like, I was always, you know, we had a pretty dedicated mission that day. I wanted to get that fish. I'd been chasing that fish for three seasons, probably a bit longer, and wanted to do it with Colorado lures, with Jace's lures, and it just so happened that I got to do it with a lure that I actually named and everything, which was even better. But, you know, the fire, everything, and then putting the gaff in it. And when we dragged it on the boat, you, that adrenaline, everything, all the joy, you know, you've worked so hard with the rest of the people on the boat. Everything's got to come together to get those sort of fish. It doesn't just happen by you as an individual. There's a lot of teamwork in it. And then, but yeah, I always have a, I feel guilty, mate, after I, I drag it on the deck.
Yeah, look, and you shouldn't feel guilty. Because, as you said, we are entitled to eat fish. We are entitled to go and get one or get two and eat it. And I don't care if someone kills a fish and they're with me. As long as that fish doesn't go to waste, that's the key to the whole thing, I think. But, oh, look, I remember, and a great friend of yours too, and mine, in Bill Milanos. Like, Bill come down here and jumped on my boat. I hadn't known Bill for any more than 20 minutes. And I put him onto 127-kilo bluefin, mate. We got that bluefin. And to see the excitement on Bill's face and Rob and Joshua were with us and that, because I'd already caught big fish. They hadn't. It was just fantastic. But Bill said to me, he said, geez, it's huge. And I said, yeah, mate. I said, this is what it's all about. But I felt guilty dragging that fish over the side of the boat. At the time, I sit back now and I think, yeah, look, we had a great time doing it, but I still feel guilty on them bigger fish. Like a little fish, but the bigger ones, I feel guilty. I've been involved in catching 16 of them. And there's blokes here in Tassie, mate, that have got and have caught a lot more of them than me. But I think it's the enjoyment you get out of seeing someone else get that big fish too that I look for now so much, as I've said to you before, you know?
Yeah. So tournament stuff, I know you've fished a lot of them. So for anyone that's just joined a club, they're getting into the club scene, all that sort of stuff, there's a lot of advantages, as you know, for joining a club, like-minded people, knowledge, all those sorts of things. But I know you still fish the tournaments over there, and I know you, once all the corona stuff settles down over here, I'm sure you're going to be back over here fishing the tournaments over here and stuff like that. What's the three top tips that you'd give someone for fishing a tournament? So if I said to you, Mark, come over here now, we're going to go out and fish the tournament, what are the three top tips that you'd recommend for someone fishing their first tournament?
My first tournament, if I was coming over, I would be making sure I enjoy myself and take it all in to start with. Learn from a lot of people that are there and talk to a lot of people and gather information. And probably the first thing I'd be doing is checking all my gear and make sure that everything was right, leader lengths, you name it. It was right because I've been a waymaster in clubs. Disqualify people, it's a shit feeling I get, and it's a horrible feeling telling them that they're disqualified. So, look, check your gear would be my number one thing to make sure everything was right. My hooks were sharpened, my leaders were right, my drag's been tested, all that sort of stuff would be my number one tip. And just enjoy yourself and take it in. Like, you might get on that big fish of a lifetime and you never know what you've got on the end of a line till you actually see it. I have a lot of people say to me, oh, I got a big fish. Yeah, do you really know you got a big fish? You don't. You don't know till you see it. You've got a fair idea, but that's, you know, just take it in and ask a lot of questions to a lot of people. You know, I know one thing, when I first joined the Tuna Club, Daniel, it was very hard to get information out of people till I actually won something. And I think now clubs are starting to change a little bit. People are starting to give up that little bit of information that 10 years ago you had to fight to get it out of them. And that's one thing I look at now. If someone's new in the club, go and help them out. You know, let them enjoy it. And, you know, it's the best man wins sometimes. And some people play a lot harder than other people. I always play pretty hard, but, you know, I'm getting to the stage now that I'm happy to show anyone or tell anyone where the fish are. You've still got to catch them. You've still got to hook them.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a few people that won't give up. Like, fishing a tournament, you know, we've fished a few now, and there's certain people that won't talk to you while the tournament's on. Like, and I'm talking of mates and that as well, like mates that have been there and pre-fished or been in the area for a while, fishing for a while before the tournament, won't share anything with you until after that tournament because they're there to win and, you know, they're there to win. So they're not going to share nothing with you. And then, like you said, there's the flip side of people as well, the people that have been there and I suppose have done it and have taken a bit of a different perspective now on their fishing and what they're there for. They're there for the camaraderie, the good time, you know, the smiles, the barbecues, all those sorts of things, sharing the enjoyment of someone getting their first fish or seeing someone catch a big fish or whatever it is. So there's a real flip side to the coin. But, I think you're on to a winner there. We always try and help people as best we can. That's why we started the Facebook page, and that's why we started the podcast and things like that. You know, the fish swim around. They're never always in the same place, usually. And you're right. You've still got to, even though you find them, you've still got to hook them.
Yeah, and that's when the other side of my, the side I love comes into it too, is I think my greatest challenges are now is to find that bait school, to find a big fish and work on that big fish and knowing what you're looking at on your sounder. Like I had an incident in far south Pedra comp, John Edwards, Pete Walker with me. Seen three big fish on the screen, just got possessed by going around and round and round and round and round in circles, working them fish up. We actually tagged 16 fish. It was getting a bit late in the day and I hadn't caught a fish. I said to John and Pete, I said, oh, I might grab one in a minute. Done another circle, got another one that was about 10, 15 kilo. Come round on these three dots again. Yeah, they're still there. I said to John, I'll grab the next one. Rod's gone off and he said, oh, I'll only be a little one. And I said, no, whatever, and he touched the rod. Well, in a comp, once someone touches the rod, they pick it up. Well, he's picked this thing up, mate, and she squealed like nothing else. And I looked at Pete and I went, there's one big fish. John ended up winning the comp, walks away with a nice Simrad sounder. That's mateship. That's a memory that no one can take from the three of us. But you've got to learn how to read that sounder, and I think that's why now I get a lot more enjoyment with my fishing, is looking at the dash, working out what's what, making sure the bait's running right. I'm anal on where my lures are, and I mean anal. I'll turn a reel for half a turn, and a lot of people just think, you idiot, but that's where I want it, and that's where I'm going to have it. And I think that can make the difference between catching a fish and not catching a fish too.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right there, you know, and you sort of touched on it a little bit as well. Don't be afraid to think outside the box. I know you're a massive fan of that, and that's one of the big things that I've learnt from you over the years, is don't be afraid to try something different. If you can't get that, like, you've clearly marked the fish, you know the fish is there, so now why isn't it eating? You know, match the hatch, you've done that, all those sorts of things. Well, those aren't the normal things aren't working. So what's the risk of trying something different? At worst, you're still not going to hook the fish. At best, you're going to get that bite and potentially, you know, get that dream fish. So always, like you say, think outside the box.
Yeah, look, and you've got to, like, I've got a classic on that, thinking outside the box. I made a lure down here and I was doing charter work with one of the charter operators, and I showed him and the clients the little lure that I'd made in the shed the night before, which was more or less a stupidity lure, but thinking outside the box, I thought, no, this will work. The client was actually an owner of a tackle shop, which sort of made it even more funnier, but cut a long story short with it, the skipper of the boat ended up taking a $100 bet with me that it wouldn't catch anything. So I've thrown this thing in the water, and 30 seconds later, an albatross has swooped down and caught it. And I said to him, well, that's me $100. And the bird's sort of flying off of this lure, and I give the line a bit of a pull, and he ended up dropping it back onto the water, which we sort of laughed at. I reckon no more than 30 seconds later, and me taking 2 footsteps towards the cabin, that rod went off with that lure on it, and we got a nice bluefin out of it. That day, not a lot of bluefin got caught, but that lure was a lure that I've used it since, and I have caught fish on it. But that was a out-of-the-box thing. It was like, no one's catching anything. Why not try something different?
Yeah.
You know, why not try that lure that you brought for $4 that you like the colour of it? Go and throw a little bit of lead weight in front of it, throw it over the side, make it go a bit deeper. You know, the little things like that, that you might be lucky enough to bag that fish on that day that's a slow day that no one else gets, and that's thinking outside the box on what to do. Put a teaser on the front of it. Do anything.
Well, there's
just try different.
There's a lot of guys doing that at the moment. I know, you know, there's a lot of lure brands out there, a lot of people running teasers and then having a lure at the very back of the teasers as part of the teaser with a hook in it and things like that. Obviously, it's not legit for tournament fishing and all that sort of stuff and records and things like that. But it's, especially down here in Victoria, it's producing the goods. Like, and I mean, producing big fish as well, a lot of big fish. So there's definitely merit in trying different things. You know, obviously, fishing tournaments is a whole new ball game again. But if you're just out there trying to catch a fish, just, you know, out with your mates and you want to share that experience, you know, thinking outside the box is a big one, and it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, well, that's, look, I say to a lot of people, you might have, and I think out of the side of the box with this, like, you're a creature of habit and I am too. We go home every night and we sit at the same plate, at the same seat, at the same table. But if you had four people at home and your wife comes out and puts four plate on the tables and three of them have got a good food on them and one hasn't, you're not going to sit at the one that has got that little meal on it. You're going to go for the big meal. So I've said to a lot of people, and I've done this, that in general, blokes run two skirted lures. I've actually put some lures together with three or four skirts, puffed them up, made them like a nice big fat saucy, hoping that the fish sees that, thinks that's a better meal than the two-skirted lure. Whether they do or whether they don't, I don't know. But I've seemed to have sometimes caught more fish on that same size skirted lure, but burn more plumpier, if that makes sense.
Yep. A lot of the boys are putting those the little squid in front of their skirted lures and that now, just on the leader. So it splashes up a lot more. Like, you know, you may have, say, a 6 or 7 inch lure at the back and then have, you know, 2 inch squid in front of them. So it varies from time to time, and it seems to work as well.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, you know, to me, a fish is always going to go for that little bit plumper lure if there's another lure alongside at the same size. It's going to go for the bigger one because it's no more effort for the fish to get that lure. And the fish might look at it, oh, well, that's a little bit bigger, it's a bit better feed. I think to catch a fish, think like a fish a little bit. And I know that sounds goofy, but that's just say how I start to think sometimes. I think,
I hope
current comes in there, you know, and you think like that.
I hope you don't come over on the boat and you just start jumping over and swimming like a fish and that. That's not what I need, mate.
No. I just start thinking like that sometimes that, you know, and that's where I come back to saying, as I said a minute ago, having that lure where you know it needs to be. You know, if it's not in the right spot, you're not going to get nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everyone sets a spread different to the next bloke, to the next bloke. But I think if you can learn something out of everyone's spread, you become a better fisherman.
Oh, I think you're 100% right there, mate. We all, you know, every boat that you get on does things differently, you know, and they work for that boat. But the more knowledge you have, obviously, you know, the old saying goes, knowledge is power. And that doesn't change whether you're in English class on a battlefield or, you know, fishing a tournament. The more tools you have in a toolbox, that allows you to have better options and then turn a slow day of fishing into a good day of fishing potentially. So, you know, like you said, setting spreads up, a lot of boats like yourself, when you're on your boat, you have your particular way of where you want each lure, how you want each lure to be set, where you want it set and what color goes where and all that sort of stuff. You know, we're no different. All my rods and reels are numbered. And they all go in certain places on the boat, and that's their place. Like that's, and everyone that gets on the boat knows that. And then, obviously, with the weather conditions and the lures that we're running, we adjust our spread accordingly. But those lures that go on those rods go into those particular positions for a reason because they work for our boat.
Yeah, and that's right, mate. I've said that to a lot of people. Like, you know, I run a short corner, and I reckon I could. You know, it's short, but it seems to work, you know. I remember a Quintrex I had a 6 metre Quintrex and I had a bar that went across the back of it and people used to look at the bar and just laugh. But the amount of fish that we caught on that bar that went from one side of the boat to the other that we run 6 rods on, I had blokes want to buy it off me, I had blokes want to copy it and everything. And it was just something that me and Pete Walker made up here one night in the backyard. We held some rods out the side of the boat and went, oh, no, that's not the right angle. We think this is the right angle. And, you know, we put a prototype together and then we come back home, he welded it up properly, chucked it in, and it was fantastic. You know, I'd seen other people with rod holders that come out the side of boats and everything. But this thing worked on that boat, it really did, and worked well, you know.
Yeah.
Made it hard to fish with the back of the boat sometimes, but we got used to that and we overcome them problems. And I think that's another great asset to anyone in charge of a boat or a skipper of a boat, to have a little bit of knowledge on what your boat can do and what you can do with your boat, and get your crew to perform in a way that you want them to perform and be where you want them to be. Because that can mean the difference of getting that big fish and losing that big fish too. Because to get a big fish is everyone. It's not one person. It's everyone on that boat doing a little bit to get that fish.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I mean, we've spoken about it on a few other episodes and things like that. You know, it often comes up when I'm talking to the guys at work and they want to come fishing, and, you know, there's a few digs and things like that. Oh, it's just you catching a fish. Well, that... it doesn't work that way. You know, these big fish, they're big, powerful fish, and you're in their element. You know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, especially when you're talking marlin close to the boat, sharks. Sharks are another big one. You know, get those big teethy critters right up next to the boat. You make a mistake, there's going to be consequences. So, you know, the team needs to be well drilled, well rehearsed, and you need to spend a bit of time in making sure the guys are good to go. You know, every time we get someone new on the boat that hasn't fished with us or hasn't fished at all for the style of fishing that we're doing, the night before we fit them out in the harness, we run through the rod with them, we show them everything. We try and arm them with as much information as we can, so that way when the adrenaline starts pumping, you know, they're not trying to make it up on the fly. They know what they need to do. They know where they need to go, and it's work for us. So, you know, you need to do those things.
Yeah, look, and that's one thing I noticed a lot when I went to Lizard Island the first year. I'd never ever sat in a game chair, mate. I'd done 60 kilo stand-up down here, and to sit in a game chair for me was just like, oh, it's just not right. But then after hooking that marlin and seeing the power in that marlin, man, I understand how people get pulled over the side of a boat now. You know, 20 kilos of drag, I've nearly seen my own son go over the side down here. If he'd went over the side, I'd never seen him again. You know, it's that sort of things that some people just don't get till it's actually going down, that this is what is actually going to happen or is happening. And you've got to react in a certain way to combat that.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, a little bit of experience is good. And experience too, and being cocky can bring you unstuck pretty quick too, if you know what I mean.
Oh, 100%, mate. The ocean's king no matter what, and people need to remember that. You know, like, I know you fish in some pretty bad conditions, but at the same time, you know, you've got the experience there to back you up for it. There's always a risk. Like, every time we put our boat on the water and head out offshore, there's always a risk, whether it's a perfectly flat, glassed out day, or whether Mother Nature's letting us know that she's alive on that day. There's always a risk. Obviously, the risks go up with weather and, you know, all sorts of things. But having that little bit of knowledge and understanding your boat as well will pay off massively.
Yeah, and look, the weather here in Tassie, you know, it's different. You know, we got the roaring 40s down here, and it roars for a reason, I tell people. But a lot of our fishing down here is pretty close to the rocks too, if you know what I mean. You get going in on the tuna down there and the Hippolytes, you can be running right alongside the cliff face, and same down around Tasman Island, Pedra. Pedra's one of them places that you wholly and solely respect before you even get in your boat. Because, you know, I've said it for a lot of years, Pedra is waiting to gobble someone up. It's just, you know, you go on the internet and have a look at it, and it's a long way away from land, and it just cuts up that rough that quick. It's not funny, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's not a nice place to be in them situations. I've been down there a couple of times in it, and I've been very happy to see the boat trailer or to see the wharf, I can tell you.
Yeah, I think we've all had stories like that, mate, where, you know, potentially we should have called it an hour earlier, but the fishing's been good or something, you know, we're hooked up. And, you know, you're always sort of running. I mean, that's our part of the reason why the boat's named Just One More, because there's always just one more. Whether it's just one more hour, just one more minute, just one more fish, whatever it is, you know, you always want to go to the end. But, you know, planning those things in. I know our guest that we had on our last podcast, Tim Dean, he spoke about it in detail. You know, once you hook up, you know, you've got to make your way home in the dark. There's all these other factors that come into play. If it's your home port and you know it really, really well, awesome. But if you're up there visiting somewhere, you know, like we come over to Tassie, don't fish over there, you don't know the water, you don't know all these sorts of things, it's probably safer to pull the lines early. You know, yep, you miss out on an hour of fishing, but you're getting home safe and you're guaranteeing that. So things to be aware of, I guess.
Yeah, well, I always say to a lot of people, you can always pack up early and fish for another day. So that's one way and a good way of looking at it. Something you touched on a minute ago about mako fishing. Now, they're a different fish again. I've got that much respect for them things that's not funny. We have an Australia Day comp down here. The last couple of years, I've done it with Adrian and Tracy Purcell on their boat. And the first year we went out and the three of us went and thought, rightio, Tracy wanted to catch a fish. I said, you're on the rod. And Tracy's no quitter by a long shot. It's a lot like your missus, mate. Gets in, saddles up, and has a red hot crack at it. Well, this day, Trace hopped into something that probably a lot of grown men would have cried at. The biggest mako I'd ever seen. She's hooked into it for about 6.5 hours. I won't name the name of the reel because I'm not into bagging people's reels or that out, but the reel crapped itself. The reel harness and the reel seat fell to bits and we pulled it together with cable ties and everything. We actually got a bloke off another boat to give us a hand to try and gaff this thing when the time come. 6.5 hours go by. This mako decides to start jumping. It done 7 jumps. And I thought, this is never going to end. We were lucky it was daylight savings.
Yeah.
We got to the stage where Tracy had enough. The sun had more or less killed it because it was a stinking hot day.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting that shark alongside the boat. And I said to Dylan, what do you reckon? And he went, it's the biggest one I've seen. He said, I caught 300 kilo one the week before. He did, and it was bigger than that. Sunk the gaff into it, straightened the gaff out, smashed the rod. This thing's took off like a cat, like there was no tomorrow. And we ended up losing it. And Dylan looked at me and he turned around and went, that's the best thing that's happened all day. And I just turned around and went, mate, that thing is one hell of an animal. And it was. You know, and I put my arms around Trace and I said, Trace, I've seen a lot of grown men buckle before you did. But she didn't actually buckle. It was just, we probably got a bit gun-shy of the thing, you know. We were a bit worried about it too. But at the end of the day, that fish won, you know. And I said to him, that's fishing, and it is. But we went back the next year for another crack, shocking conditions. And I don't think this has happened to too many people. My son was on the rod because it was rough. It was pretty rough too, and Trace didn't want to have a go at it. Adrian was driving the boat, and I said, don't let the shark in front of the boat. And he said, no, that's easy done. The next minute, this thing's took off. It's jumped, landed on the roof of the Staby craft, smashed all the gear up there and whatever else you want, come down, rolled alongside the boat. I've got my arms and sort of tried to give it a bit of a push to the side of the boat, and it's hit the side of the boat and rolled back into the water. But we don't know how lucky we were. We could have been in the boat with a shark that had been hooked for about 3 or 4 minutes. And that just put a lot of it into perspective for me. But then I've got my son that turns around and says, Dad, it's still on the line, you know. It was just bizarre, and I just thought to myself, that thing deserves to live. And we ended up when it jumped, it landed on the line and snapped the line. But I thought to myself, you don't know how lucky you can be. Miles from anywhere, yeah, anything could happen.
Oh, mate, they don't call them blue dynamite for no reason. Like, there's a fuse. When they're hooked, that's the fuse that's lit, and it's only a matter of time before they go absolutely retarded and just like it. It can end really bad really quick, mate. Like, it doesn't take much at all.
I've said to a lot of people, you know, like, they are just unpredictable, and they really are, you know. And I think you get as much fun, and you got to treat one that's 100 kilos or 50 kilos with the same respect as that 300 kilo one, because you don't know what you got. You really don't sometimes.
I remember, so Dad and Rod fished together for years. I mean, everyone that listens to the podcast knows all about it. But they fished together for years and years. And there was a tournament that they fished over at Burmy where they got a little mako. Like, he would have only been 3 foot, maybe 4 foot at the most. And they didn't gaff him or anything. They, like, just dragged him in the boat, put him in the boat, and then this thing just went ballistic. So here's two grown men up the front of the boat while Snappy Teeth's down the back, destroying the whole electrical system, destroying fuel lines, wrecking everything, like just turning this boat inside and out. And that was only, you know, a little, what we'd class as a little shark. But I suppose the point is, it doesn't matter whether they're little or, you know, the 400 kilo one, they can do the damage when they want to.
Yeah, they're just... You know, and I've done the same thing. I seen a little one day, and we me and Rob and Brett Smart, we hadn't caught a lot of fish that day, and I decided to gaff this little thing. 40 kilos, if that. I just gaffed it, threw it in the boat. Man, that totaled it. Smashed rods, everything. I was nearly going to get the gaff and throw it back in the drink, but ended up sitting on it to calm it down, but fair dinkum, man, the thing went ballistic.
Yeah.
You know, and Rob said to me, he said, geez, you do some stupid things. And I said, well, at least we've got a feed of fish to go home with.
Well, they're just an awesome creature, you know. Like, one minute you're looking out the back of the boat at the burley bucket, and then next thing they're just there. Like, they just appear. It's, you know, they are such an awesome creature. And I know, you know, like, when you've seen one at the back of the boat, in its natural habitat, without a hook in it or anything, and it's just cruising around doing its thing, they are so graceful. Like, they are the apex predator. You know, they're doing their thing, and they just look incredible in the water, mate. Like, they are so
good. Yeah, look, I've seen one great white down here, and that just blew my mind. That thing didn't wag its tail, but it went a long way with just the movement of its tail. I kept saying to the bloke that was with me, if that thing wanted to have a go, you'd have no chance.
Yeah.
You know? And to see him sort of just glide through the water with no ripples, no nothing, he's just gracefully minding his own business, swimming up the Burley Trail looking for something to eat.
Yeah.
You know? But one of the other things I get probably 90% of my enjoyment out of now, mate's kids. Taking the kids fishing, or, you know, or taking that mate that's never ever caught a fish, as you've said before. And I think Timmy Dean said a bit about this too, you know, like, that's where it lies with me at the moment, doing that sort of thing. And I get a lot of enjoyment out of that, you know. There's a lot of kids that the biggest fish they've ever caught is a flathead, let alone sooner, you know, 10, 15 kilo tuna. But to let the kids on the rods now is what I'm more about. I've done it in comp fishing with kids, and I remember Ronnie O'Neill's young bloke, one of the girls here that came out with us a bit. We took her son in one of the comps, and we ended up winning a TLD 30, mate. Like, she rang me up about 9 o'clock that night, and she sent me a photo, and he's in bed with a rod, you know. What it's the things like that that really make it worthwhile for me now, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
You know, and when you've got your own kids and you see your own kids catching fish and having fun, it's, you know, I've got a little grandson now, he's only one, but I can't wait, if you know what I mean, to just go and catch a flathead with him or a salmon or anything, you know. So that's sort of what I'm looking forward to now, you know. And as I've said to you, mates coming over and saying to them, right, you're a Tassie, you catch a fish. I always had the rule on my boat that if you'd never been on my boat or been with us and caught a fish, you were always the first person on the rod. You know, that's, you know, I look at Bill, that's how Bill got that big fish here. It's how a lot of people have caught good fish here in Tassie with me, you know.
Yep.
They're here, let them enjoy themselves, if you know what I mean. And I've been over there and had the same thing happen with me, and it's great to have that happen.
Yeah, 100%, mate. So you sort of segued into a few things there, but so the pinnacle fish, mate, it's a question that we ask all the people that come on the podcast with us. You know, we've got our list of loaded questions that we always go in with, but the pinnacle fish, you've sort of mentioned the makos, the tuna. Are they the go-to fish, or what's the bucket list dream fish that you're sort of still chasing, or that you remember the most, or whatever it is?
Look, the fish I probably remember the most and I got the most enjoyment out of was me black marlin in the Lizard Island comp, putting a satellite tag in that. That just, it ticked one of them big boxes for me.
Yep.
And, yeah, look, that's probably been the highlight of the whole thing, along with the year that I tagged the 230 fish. And probably my best achievement that I haven't really said a lot about is, and I don't know whether this is a straw that sort of slowed me down or not, Daniel, that I always wanted to get a tag fish back. And I think when I got that tag fish back and that fish was caught in New Zealand and I got the phone call from the Pee-wee in New South Wales, that was sort of like I've reached that goal that I set myself a long time ago.
Yep.
I think after that, I sort of backed back and I thought, do I really need to achieve any more in this? Have I achieved what I wanted to achieve? And I had.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think, you know, if I got thrown in a hole in the ground tomorrow, I could say to myself, well, you know, I did achieve something in my life that I really wanted to achieve, if you know what I mean. And that's one thing I really wanted to do, and I've done it, if you know what I mean.
Yep. So out of all the tagged fish then, how many actual tags have you got back?
One.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, mate. That's, honestly, you know, I've got mates that have tagged probably a half, maybe even a quarter of what you've tagged, and they've had two or three tags come back and things like that. So it's I'm pretty blown away by that you've tagged so many fish and only had one come back. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got the date and everything on it that we tagged that fish, I used to use my iPad for all my tag photos. We could go back and put it down to, I think it was 24 fish on that day that I tagged. And I knew it was one of them 24 fish, which was a good thing too for me. Since then, I've been with Phil. Phil's, we had another day, we tagged 15 fish, and Phil got one of them tags back. But, yeah, I personally have only ever got one tag back out of all the tags I put in, and that fish was caught. I tagged it at Pedra, and I think it was 735 days it was Liberty and was caught on the South Island in New Zealand.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's the first bluefin to swim from Tassie. That, well, it's probably not the first, but the first one to actually be caught over there with a tag in it.
So
from Australia.
Did you get a certificate and all that sort of stuff? They sent you out all that?
Yeah, I got a certificate and all that, and the tuna club framed it all for me and everything. Yeah, and I've got that on the wall of the shack alongside with a couple of photos of Dad's old fishing boats and a few things like that. And I've got a collection of tails here out of bluefin tuna, and they're all over 100 kilos. I've kept all the tails. It's one thing I do if someone that's with me catches one, I sort of go for the tail, if you know what I mean, and I've dried them out and I've got them here as memories or souvenirs, however you want to put it. It's just,
so that was, I suppose. That was something that Dad actually mentioned to me back in the day. I don't know if it's still a thing or if it was a thing, but he actually mentioned that like when you're fishing on someone's boat and you get a big fish or whatever, you actually donate the tail to the captain or whatever it is. Is that how I'm... I don't know, but well, I don't know if it's a thing or not, but that's what I got told, so.
Well, the thing that I always was told and brought up with like that, and a lot of people said to me, and they always said to me, and I remember Mick Abbott said it to me, and I've had people actually give me one, that if they ever got a fish over 100 kilos, they always give me a bottle of whiskey.
Oh, I think you're just throwing that in for when I come over, you want a bottle of whiskey. That's what you're really saying.
John Edwards actually, when he got his fish down at Pedra, he come up and give me a bottle of whiskey. Bill give me a lot more than that, as you know, through Navicaro. But, you know, that's one thing that I was always sort of, from the older generation of people, was one thing that they always said. They always called it a bottle fish. But, yeah, look, I took up collecting the tails. Just as a memory, I suppose, of what we'd done and that. Like, I've got a few photo of me marlin, one's jumping, and I look at that and I think, yeah, no, that's great. I kept a copy of the paperwork of the satellite tag, and I've also got that. So we all collect little memories in different ways.
Yep.
So it's, and you can't replace memories. You've always got them, if you know what I mean. You never forget who was on that boat or who gaffed that fish that was 100 kilos and you were on the rod for X amount of hours, and you know the colour of the lure and all that. It's just them little things that stick in your mind.
Yeah, 100%, mate. The memories are always there. I mean, now in these days, we've got GoPros, we've got cameras, we've got all sorts of stuff on the boat. There's nothing that really gets missed. I mean, we film a lot of our stuff, obviously, for our videos for YouTube and stuff like that. But when I'm editing stuff, you go through everything and there's so much that you miss. Like, it's unbelievable. Just little things or people having conversations and they forget that the camera's recording and stuff like that. And just the funny stuff. You know, if I could make a highlight reel of just funny stuff, I reckon I could fill it for a month or so with the stuff that goes on that you don't actually see on our videos. Some of it's obviously got to be beeped out because it could be entertaining. But, you know, it's... You're right. The memories and all those sorts of things these days is a big part of it. And, you know, you've touched on it. I've touched on it. That's part and parcel of the reason why we do what we do, because those memories you'll have for forever.
Yeah, look, and that's right. But look, you know, you do your videos too. And I know I've sat here some nights that we've been fishing and to see the techniques of people holding a rod or help them improve through looking at videos holding rods. Like Mick Abbott always said to me, never ever fish with your watch band on, you know, little things like that. They might not mean something, but if you get a bit of line running over it, bang, you've lost what you've got. You know, it's the little things like that that you learn from. And I think it's good too, if you lose a big fish or something like that, or to look back and actually try and work out where you've lost it or where you can improve, I think, is the big thing. And don't think you can't keep improving, because every fish dictates to you and that boat in a different way. I don't think I've ever had two fish fight the same fight, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's always been a lot different. You know, you get some fish go to the bottom, you'll get some that run the surface, and especially with marlin. I haven't done a lot of marlin fishing. It's one thing I want to do more of, but, you know, no one down here really cubes. No one down here skip baits. I'm starting to throw them little things in now and think outside the box.
Yep.
Of different ways to catch fish here in Tassie.
So I know, you know, the sword fishery over there is massive. You sort of haven't gone for that? It's nothing that sort of piqued you or spiked your interest?
I've had a go at it with a couple other blokes. I know how to do it. I know what's got to be done to do it. My big thing is they're the ultimate fish. Yep. Do I really want to bring one up knowing that I probably don't want to keep it and I don't want to take it?
Yeah.
You know, if I knew I could bring one up and he'd be fine, I could say thanks for the fight, mate, and let him go, I'd probably do it tomorrow.
Yeah,
but that's
okay.
That's where I stand with it. Look, if I go out and hook one and it's in a competition, I don't know, but I don't want to kill a fish to win a prize, if you know what I mean. I'm not that sort of person. I never have been.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, but they are the ultimate fish. They're a beautiful fish to see hanging up. Look, I've been lucky enough to weigh a few. I was pretty involved with Leo Miller when Leo was catching his first couple. And to string them up and see them on a gantry, they're an awesome-looking fish. And they're another fish that deserve a lot of respect. And if you can go and catch one, as you said, you're entitled to take a feeder fish home. Take it home. Don't waste it. Take it home.
Yeah.
You know, the day will come. Look, if one of my boys said to me, we want to go and have a crack at one, yeah, look, we'll go and do it. You know, my own son's never caught a large tuna, so that's something this year we're going to have a crack at. You know, I'm just in the pros of, as I've said to you, setting up the boat, putting new sounders in, getting the right prop, getting everything right. So this year is probably going to be a bit more of a game on for me, which will be interesting to see whether people I've fished with over the last couple of years have learned something and can keep up with the old dog, or see what happens, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, nice. I Yeah, look, mate, having fished on Rod's boat and then having him back on my boat with Dad and having Rod catch his first marlin, I've spoken about it heaps of times on other podcasts and everything. But that memory there is one that, you know, I will never, ever forget. And just seeing the enjoyment that Rod had, and, you know, that was the first and only marlin that we've actually taken. Because it meant so much to us. It was obviously Rod's first one for the boat, first one on the new rod and reel, all these first. So, you know, we kept that and ate it. But the other big highlight, I think that, you know, if I was looking back on the memories, the big one that really sticks with me is having two marlin hooked up, both myself and Dad fighting marlin and Jackie driving the boat in amongst a heap of boat traffic. Like, I mean, we were on, it was one of the best marlin trips we've had to date. We were on fire, you know, we'd already tagged three other fish. We had boats around us everywhere because they knew that we were on the fish. And then both Dad and I hooked up on marlin and Jackie driving the boat, driving us through all these other boats, and talking on the radio, telling boats to get out of the way. You know, I was up the front of the boat at one stage while Dad was down the back of the boat fighting his marlin. And then, you know, just that experience where the teamwork and obviously having Jackie driving the boat and doing everything, knowing that she hadn't done much driving of the boat, it was just, mate, that there is one of the best memories I've got so far. Obviously, I hope there's going to be a lot more that come, but that memory there, mate, it was awesome. It was so good.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, mate. They're like, my dad passed away now, but they're the things that really make it worthwhile, you know. They really are, that you can't replace that, you know. It's as you said, it's something that's close to your heart and means a lot to you. And I think that's what fishing does. It brings people close together and brings them memories.
Yeah.
You know, and you touched on Jackie there driving the boat. Like, she's probably just as nervous as you two on the rods driving the boat. And, you know, that's a great asset that in the future, that she's not going to be so scared to jump behind the wheel and chucking in gear and do what she needs to do and help out. And that's why we all come back to the one thing of it's a team effort. It's not one person doing it. Like, I've done a fair bit of – I did it 1 year down here. I was in that crappy dark hole that blokes get into every now and then that don't like to talk about and don't want other people to know about. And so I got in one of them places, or I'm still there a little bit now, but I did a lot of fishing by myself. And, you know, you're out there tagging fish and doing what you love doing, but, you know, there's so much can go wrong and things like that. And I look back now and I think, mate, what was I trying to do? It's easier to take someone with you. It's someone to say, oh, I did this, you know, and share that enjoyment with, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, I the great friend on the boat that everyone should have, I think, is Autopilot. You know, he's an asset to everyone. I said to Bill when I first got mine, I thought, oh, you know, another toy. But to fish by yourself, you got to have it, I reckon. And to fish with other people too, it's a great thing. But, you know, you've still got to have eyes and ears on the ocean to know what's going on around you.
Yeah.
But you've done a great job to help you with that memory.
Oh, mate.
There of you and your dad, mate.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting now with the bigger boat. I mean, everyone seems to be pretty good at captaining it when we're out and we're not in the marina. But when we get near the marina, no one wants anything to do with the helm. It's like, no, you're good. You'll be right. You'll be right.
I know where the fender's going. I know where the ropes go. I've got that covered. You're right.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. If only it worked that way, mate. So, look, it's been awesome having you on the show, mate. I really appreciate you you taking out some time and jumping on board. I know you're in the midst of moving and everything, so I'm going to be interested to see if all those tuna tails go with you. I know you're down.
No, mate, you'll be happy to know that the tuna tails have gone in the back of the ute tonight, and they'll be going back to the shack tomorrow morning when I go to work. So, yeah, they are staying with me. I have got rid of a lot of things. I didn't actually realise how much fishing gear I had to the other day, and I put it in the shipping container. But yeah, there's a bit there. I, as I said to you the other day, it's quite daunting sometimes what you do collect. Never have enough gear. I think the first time I came to Victoria, I took one of my lure bags over, and I think my lure bag made more than my luggage.
Yeah. And, you know, I keep telling Jackie that as well. We need another rod. We need another 30 wide or another 50 or, you know, maybe even an 80 now or something. I don't know. But I keep getting told off. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, look, as I said to one of my mates once, mate, always buy your Mr. Something gold, buy a nice new Tagra. It's not a ring, but it's gold.
I'm going to try that. She's laughing in the background because she's heard you, but I don't know whether once I end this call, whether I'm going to get laughing. So
it's one of them things, mate. It's, you know, I've been lucky. My wife has never said boo to me, mate. Look, I went and brought a boat, brought it home, and, like, we were struggling a fair bit, you know. I spent 40G and wheeled a boat in the backyard, and she said, "What's that?" I said, "I just brought it today," and didn't even tell her I brought it. So
you're a gamer, you know, you're a gamer man than me, mate, because I'd be living in the doghouse without the dogs, and be begging for meals and all sorts of stuff. So fair play to you on that one.
Yeah, look, even the last boat I brought, mate, you know, and Kath didn't even come and look at it, and I spent a fair bit of money, and I've been lucky, you know. I've always said to her, "Go and do what you want to do," you know. I've never said to her, "Don't do anything." And I think if you get that good relationship with your wife, and it's, you know, you can trust each other and all that sort of stuff, you know, it's great. But look, mate, you're doing something that you love and Jackie love together. Like, she's chasing that 4-kilo record. You imagine the day you get it. Just, you know. Mate,
I go to bed imagining the day I'm going to get it, yeah. Let me tell you.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's what I mean. And, like, whoever's with you on that day, you'll probably have a tear in your eye the whole lot, you know, and you will. It's just something that the energy's building towards it, and you, hopefully you succeed it. You know, I've got an article here, and I'll actually dig it out and send you a copy of it. It's called Once in a Blue Moon, you know, that's been read about at a old bloke that fished all his nightlife and never ever caught a bluefin tuna. You know, and it's incredible. I've read it a couple of times, and it really sinks into you sometimes that, you know, what it actually means to go and achieve what you want to achieve in your life. It's one of them stories that makes you sit back and think, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, you know, fishing's, especially when you start setting yourself those records and the goals, like the real, you know, it's like anything that's often difficult and hard to do means that it's worth doing. You know, you put the time and effort in, and then when it does finally happen, you know, you're going to remember that, and it's going to be a memory that you'll treasure, and you'll have it with you forever. So yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, well, I say to a lot of people, you can sit and watch rods all day and they never go off, and then you turn for a second, and we all love the squeal of a reel, but you never know when it's going to happen. You just don't. You put a lure in the water, you never know when it's going to go off.
And that's what keeps you coming back. So, you know, a lot of people that have been on the boat now, once they've heard that reel, they're hooked. It's a drug.
You know, I've said to a lot of people, you know, I've had 3 or 4 days down here comp fishing on a bait with Mick and not even turn the reel, you know, and you start thinking to yourself, you know, everyone goes to sleep and everyone starts playing gag games on everyone, you know, hook a bucket on the line and lower it over the side, you know, and, you know, back the drag right off, and, you know, you just don't know when that squeal's going to come and that reel's going to peel line, and that's why you do it. And that's why we get wet and we pull wet weather gear on and we go and do what we do, I suppose.
Yeah. You're 100% right, mate. So, all right, buddy. Like I said, yep. Mate, really appreciate you taking the time out tonight and jumping on the podcast. Like I said, I know you're in the middle of moving and there's a fair bit going on over there. I know you're setting things up and getting ready for your tuna season that you've got coming and things, but really appreciate you taking the time out and jumping on. I look forward to getting you over here once Victoria let us out to play and do things. So, you know... Yep. We've got that. Hopefully, we're going to get a marlin season this year where we're allowed to go to New South Wales and actually fish and do things. And I'm looking forward to getting you on the boat and getting you onto a marlin on the back of the deck and doing a few things. So stay safe over there. Say hi to Kath and the family for us, mate, and stay in touch, buddy.
Yeah, we'll do, mate. And listen, look, if any of your listeners are ever coming to Tassie and want a bit of advice, or if they come down here and look, I'll take anyone fishing, you know. If they want to get in contact with you or contact with me and say, look, if you're going, can I come? And if I'm going, I'll take them. I don't mind, mate. That's how you meet new people. You make new friends. And that's what fishing's all about to me now. So, you know, the invite's there. If, you know, we know someone coming down and you want to look around Tassie, just give us a yell. If I can help you out, I'll help you out.
Awesome, mate. You have a good night and stay safe.
All right, mate. Stay safe and happy fishing.